All right. Hey, yo, it's me. It's me. It's the RVE. Back here with an episode of the Heelcast. We are covering Revolution, the final match of Sting, his retirement. With me should be the AEW CW dude or Mae Young dude, whatever the fuck his name is now at this point, and Griggers, who actually were live at the show. But those pussies are recovering from having a great fucking time and getting shattered with glass. So I went out and I got the notorious AEW hater of the Heelcast. I've got Goldberg with me.
What up?
What's up, man? You ready to actually not shit all over AEW for once, brother?
Yeah, that remains to be seen. I'll see. We'll see about that.
We will. And then with me, I've got the podcasting GOAT, the greatest of all time for wrestling podcasts, the official podcaster of the fucking LFC himself. I've got Larky Lark and the Funky Bunch with us.
It's a pleasure to be back on the air with you, Raven Effect. And it's a pleasure to be back on with you as well, Mr. Goldberg. It's a pleasure and a privilege, guys. Thank you for having me.
Larky, thank you, brother. Seriously, I mean, when I say Larkin is a GOAT, I truly feel and believe this. Larkin is the man, and we're lucky to have you around here. FK9, where you been at, man? That's the other one we missed. But Larkin is the bona fide GOAT and legend here.
Thank you.
So, gentlemen, I mean, got a couple, you know, I'm not going to really cover all the other shit going on right now. This is about Sting, the icon, and the great event, personally, in my opinion, like one of the best pay-per-views I've seen in a very long time, if not ever, last night. And maybe I'm just, you know, high off of it right now, but it was a damn good show if you're asking me. Real quick though, tomorrow, I'm excited as shit about the return of Dark Side of the Ring. A plug that I don't get any mention for. It's the best show on TV, if you're asking me. You guys excited for the show?
I am. I think what we have this season and just everything that we're going to see and unfold in the world of professional wrestling behind the scenes, the inside look, I'm excited.
Goldberg, do you watch the show?
I do watch the show. Is this the first episode?
Yeah, it's
so Earthquake. Earthquake, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I love it. I love it, and I can watch it with my girlfriend, even though she's not a huge wrestling fan, but it's always a captivating show that you don't have to be a wrestling fan to watch. So
that's what I'm saying. Like my wife one day, I had watched it, I was asleep, I think this was like COVID time, and I'm you know, taking a nap or some shit, or it's throughout the night, and my wife just fucking somehow turns this on and binge watches the entire first season while I'm asleep. I wake up like, what the fuck are you doing? And she's like, oh, this show's really good. Thank God.
Love it. I love it.
And I mean, the first four episodes, I mean, if that just doesn't like hook you in, it's Earthquake, Buff Bagwell, Terry Gordy, and Brutus Beefcake. Like, how can you not?
You know, yeah. Speaking of Buff Bagwell, before we move on to the next topic, did you guys see DDP's video?
I did.
The recent video of Buff and Scotty Riggs? Was that not phenomenally done or what?
Yeah, American males, man.
But incredible. The Scotty Riggs is, I mean, I don't even know who's better, Buff or Scotty, the turnaround, but can't believe both of them were in that. I mean, we've known Buff has been in that position for years, but Scotty Riggs basically fell off the map.
We saw Scotty in the crowd at AEW for Sting's last match. Like, he was looking good. Yeah.
I don't think he would have been there had it not been for DDP. So,
agreed.
DDP was also there, so no coincidence there. I didn't see Buff, though. I don't think Buff Bagwell was there.
I think he was still trying to pull down his mother off the pole
in Judy that match. Beckwell, baby.
Yes, Judy Beckwell on a pole match that will still be defended to this day by our own Hurls. So,
oh wait, RV, did you watch the video or no?
I actually have not seen it. I mean, who's not excited for the American Male reunion? I mean, talk about one of the greatest tag teams of all time. But on a lighter note, no, it's pretty awesome to hear.
Very heartwarming story.
Yeah,
DDP is the man. He is the man.
Yeah, I mean, he does not get enough credit. Neither does Mother Wayne as far as being hot. I really hope Christian is legitimately hitting that, and we'll get to that in a second.
Well, wait a minute. Also, why do you, Larky, I know RV, we texted about it earlier, but why do you think DDP and Lex Luger were not shown on the broadcast? Larky, do you any opinion on that?
I have no idea. I mean, Lex Luger, unfortunately, is in a wheelchair, and I mean, DDP, I really don't know. I would have liked to seen him more on camera. I mean, we saw Scotty Riggs, we saw Magnum TA, which was great to see. But yeah, I honestly don't know. But I mean, when you look at someone like DDP, I know he's done some stuff with Cody, with the WWE and everything. But I mean, Like, really, I honestly couldn't even tell you. But, I mean, I think who we got there to see there, I don't know. I honestly can't say. But I'm just happy that he was there, at least.
Me too. Me too. And they took plenty of pictures backstage. So.
Yes.
I'm just happy that DDP gifted QT Marshall the diamond cutter. What a gift to the business that was, right?
Yep.
QT Marshall actually booked Scotty Riggs. You see that, Lark?
I did. Yes.
Yeah. What a nice thing.
Sadly, Scotty Riggs is probably still more over than QT Marshall will ever be, and that's not saying hardly anything.
Well, that makes me laugh that he left because of the direction of the company, and then like a few months later he's back, but in a different position, which is hilarious.
Grass ain't always greener.
Yep.
Turns out nobody wanted him at all. Literally, he's pretty worthless. Other than what's that that Harley chick with the big huge boobs?
Harley Cameron.
Yeah, I need to stop. I need to take a cold shower or something all of a sudden. But
well, really quickly, I think the other person that I did see a video wise, it was all over social media, and who can't really get booked a lot here in the States, but we saw Alberto El Patron is now back in AAA.
Oh, really?
Yes. Conan and Vampiro were in the ring, and they introduced him. He came out. He gave a speech in Spanish, and then him and Vampiro and Conan all hugged.
That's nice. Maybe he's clean now.
He looked good, though. I will say that.
He maybe cleaned himself up. Who knows? Yeah. You know, he's a relatively big name.
What could go wrong there, you know?
Now we got Austin Aries trying to come back, right?
Yeah, that I'm not going to hate on. I'm all for that front row. And we just saw NWA put out a magazine. I mean, they are really going for that. It's 1987 thing, hard again, nice. But you know. And also, I mean, I've been talking about blondes with big boobs, but Alex Hammerstone. Another blonde with big boobs signed with TNA. I think it's a segue.
Brilliant segue. Brilliant.
I thought so. It's no holds barred today. So,
well done.
I thought so. I fucking clicked in my head. I'm like, I got to get this out somehow. I got it going. But honestly, no. We're big Hammerstone guys here. We're not big TNA guys like we used to be. But I think it's a great sign. I think that dude he's got a good look to him.
I think from his tenure in MLW, and I mean, I know he did some work for Ring Wars, which was a short-lived promotion in the Vegas area. I mean, you look at someone like Alex Hammerstone, who's just big. He's brawn. I mean, you can put him again there with like a guy like a Josh Alexander, whoever. I think he's really going to stand out within the heavyweight division. I mean, you have Nick Nemeth in there. You have Steve Macklin. There's so many great people that he can work with and bounce off of. I think that's a huge get for the TNA brand.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my hope is that TNA rebuilds this heavyweight division in a respectable fashion with guys like Hammerstone, you know, muscular guys, big guys who can pass as heavyweight guys. And I just, that's what I'm hoping for. But I don't know. Do you think these guys are a thing of the past? These muscular Brian Cage, Hammerstone-esque guys, or is this a thing of the past?
Well, if you're Tony Khan, it's a thing of the past. But I think when you're in TNA, man, it's very interesting with how the business has evolved. But I mean, I'm before a guy like a Hammerstone and Moose. So you put me Moose and Hammerstone, I'm there for
the
athleticism.
I'm there.
Yeah.
That's a heavyweight. That is a heavyweight title match, Moose versus Hammerstone.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, no, it's how it is. I mean, I remember when Chris Sabin first won in 2013, beating Bully Ray in that matchup, and then he lost it like 3 weeks later. I'm like, it was a nice moment for Chris Sabin, but I'm like, no, I don't buy him as a world heavyweight champion. Alex Shelley, for the story-wise of like, he's been there for years. He's an OG, much like Chris Sabin. I get it, but I'm just like,
I don't buy it either, though.
I'm like, Alex Shelley.
I don't buy it either.
Exactly.
I don't buy it either. He's a great, great tag champion, all-timer, but he's not a heavyweight champion in my book. And it's funny you bring up the past with TNA because I think the same thing with Jeff Jarrett once when he was on top, he gave Jay Lethal a shot at the title. And for me, it was just like, it's not Jay Lethal. I didn't see him as that heavyweight kind of guy. And they took all those guys that you're mentioning, like Kazarian and all these guys, took them from the X division and only a couple of them landed as serious contenders, AJ Styles obviously being the number one, but it's just, I'm with you. I don't buy, especially we're talking 15 years later, I'm not buying Chris Sabin and Alex Shelley as heavyweight contenders.
Right. And then, like you mentioned with Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal, like when Jay Lethal, like the first time I ever saw Jay Lethal was Ring of Honor. He had a big feud with Loki at the time in 05. And then here he comes into TNA in 06. Like it was a big moment with the black machismo character. You enhance the character. And he's there beating Kurt Angle. Like, okay, that's cool. But when he's going against, like, Jeff Jarrett early, like, for the NWA World title on, like, an Impact or whatever, I'm like, yeah, no. No, it's a little too soon for me.
Yeah. It's the X Division, guys. And what a great X Division. They were all, like, up in, like, that X Division made TNA. But as heavyweight contenders, I don't buy it. There were tag guys who you could buy. James Storm, Robert Roode, you could turn those guys into heavyweight contenders, but not the X Division. And you're right. That's what RVE. What do you think about? I mean, what do you think about that topic? The fact that, you know, Tony Khan. I mean, where do you think Darby Allin goes from here? He'll probably go to the heavyweight picture.
Well, he'll be climbing Mount Everest in about a month, as you said on the media.
That's true. He may not live through it. So
true.
You know, I think Larkin hit it on the head. He said exactly what I want to say. If you're Tony Khan. Yeah, it's the next Raven's rant or RVE's rant, I should say, because, you know, that Raven actually being my name, people still want me to cancel myself. So anyways, I digress here, motherfuckers. The way that Brian Cage and Lance Archer are booked in some of these heavyweight guys and Tony Khan's booking infuriates me is almost as much as every time he tweets does. But I'm big on Hammerstone. I am. I think he's the Hulk Hogan throwback. I do feel like you need to look. You know,
he also respects Hulk Hogan. He respects Hulk Hogan, which is nice.
Yes,
in this day and age.
Yes.
Refreshing. Yeah.
I mean, it's not viable that some of these fucking people, Darby Allin, you know, and I got a newfound respect for Darby after last night, which I didn't before. But you can't tell me he could kick Brian Cage's fucking ass. Like,
I'll do you one better. When Hook is defending the FTW championship against Brian Cage and he's throwing these punches, these live rounds, so to speak, at Brian Cage. And look, I know if you go back in the days of ECW with Taz and Bam Bam Bigelow or Taz against the Bubba Ray Dudley and these in particular matches, Taz against the Shane Douglas, if you will, like for the presentation, I understood it. But I look at Hook and I'm like, no. He's not beating up Brian Cage. Like, stop it. He is not thwarting the attack of Brian Cage. I'm like, no, just stop it.
He also has no personality. I mean, maybe his personality might be having no personality. I don't know. But
well, no, that's the gimmick. He's the silent but deadly type of guy. You know, like he'll talk like he'll just do like, you want my attention. And I'm like, even when he did that with Danhausen, he's like, you got my attention now. And I'm like, stop it. Like when he was cutting that promo on Samoa Joe and he's like, you beat me. But I'm going to come back. And I'm like, all right, that's nice. Thanks for sharing. Like, that's it.
It's I remember a silent assassin type, and his name was Bill Goldberg, and that worked because it was believable. And you know, just say real quick, and Larky, you got good points about his dad. But, dude, his dad, the way Paul Heyman booked it, like, Taz, you didn't notice, you didn't realize Taz was fucking Fred Flintstone, like a stumpy little Danny DeVito motherfucker. Like, Taz was badass as fuck. Like, you believe Taz was badass, and he was. Now he's Danny DeVito, but in talking about yam bags, but like at the time, dude, the way that it was booked and presented, like, Hook does not have that.
Oh, no.
I agree.
And like I said, I have nothing against Hook, but I look at that dude and I'm like, okay, he's got a goofy haircut. He eats chips. He wears, has a backpack. And I'm like, I'm good. Like
it's fun, but you know, it's almost, everything has to be funny nowadays. Like, it's just, it's not serious to me, which is one of my biggest gripes with AEW. If Tony Khan would have pushed the right people up until this point, which instead of Daniel Garcia and instead of Hook, and instead of, I guess, Darby Allin, even though if he would have pushed, I'm sorry, can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yep. Oh, my bad. So if he would have pushed Brian Cage in that fashion, like he's been pushing Daniel Garcia, would Brian Cage not have the potential to be like the next major star in wrestling at this point, the way he's booked Daniel Garcia?
It's just, that's the issue I have with Daniel Garcia and the likes of a Wheeler Yuta. Tony sees it in him and he sees in Wheeler Yuta. And I'm like, I see Claudio, I see Moxley, I get it. Then here comes Wheeler talking about, yeah, I like the violence. And I'm like, please don't speak. Like, and just don't put him on my TV. He sees these guys as the next stars. And I'm like, you're pushing them too fast. Right. Like, I don't want, that's his iota. That's what he feels yep. is how it should be.
And he gives them turns. Here, it's your push real quick. We'll give you a good month, maybe 2 months. And now right. it's the next guy's turn. And now you're gone. And now the next guy's turn.
He's just, it's like Russian roulette with your career. It's like, okay, I'm tired of playing with this action figure. Now I want to play with this yeah. action figure. And
Harvey,
like,
does that make sense to you?
Yeah,
oh, absolutely. Like I do not disagree. Like what your complaint is my complaint too. And truthfully, this is a great segue. Although I do want to say I'm all here for Kazarian as TNA World Champ, but we're talking about Daniel Garcia and here's our opening match. One thing, Tony Khan said that he knows more about the wrestling business than Eric Bischoff. Well, there was this guy named Das Wonder Kid Alex Wright.
Yes, that's Daniel Garcia.
And Eric Bischoff had him and realized, like, this guy has no charisma. He's decent in the ring, but not spectacular. And he has a dance. And so he kind of belongs on the lower mid card. And that's Daniel Garcia of today. But Tony Khan is literally like, did you see that fucking cage match against the House of Black? Like, he is trying to push this guy to be a megastar. Like, and Alex Wright was probably fucking better. Like, I am stunned that, thank God Christian won last night. Because I was like, they're going to end this amazing reign with Daniel fucking Garcia.
But you can't really compare. That's what I'm saying when I say, like, it's a different time now, like Larkin was saying, too. Like, it's just such a different time. It's almost, like, comparable to the NBA where, like, Steph Curry kind of changed the whole league. Now you're like you can't be a big guy, like in today's league, in the NBA. You can't really be a big guy. You have to be able to shoot a three. Like, you have to be a little guy who can flip around. To make it an AEW, like, it's just such a different time. And Daniel Garcia would literally be a guy who would be on Saturday night and just fucking be squashed by Bill Goldberg. Like, it wouldn't even, he'd be Norman Smiley. Norman Smiley got himself over by fucking doing the wiggle. So
yes. If this was WWE, he would be a Jay Brown on like a Heat or Velocity back in the day. Like, that's right. That's what Daniel Garcia would be.
Right. Pushing the wrong guys.
He'd be getting beat by the Mattitude version 2.0 or whatever it was at the.
Oh, the
Tony Khan. Yes. No, go ahead.
I was going to say the Mattitude follower that is Shannon Moore. Yes.
Yeah.
Shannon Moore had a good build compared to Daniel Garcia.
Correct.
So.
No, I'm sorry, man. To add to your point, what I love about what you're saying is, and again, yes. no hate with Daniel Garcia, but it's like Alex Wright mixed with like a Chippendales dancer. And again, this okay. dude, I understand, like, again, you like Daniel Garcia, but it's like when Chris Jericho and Action Andretti, they tried to make Action Andretti like the 1-2-3 kid. Oh, he can do cool moves. Everybody can do cool moves. Everybody's doing fucking flips and shit.
Yep.
Like, you talk about it not being serious. Action Andretti's out there with fucking Top Flight, and he's going hydration and chugging a water bottle. Like, am I supposed to find that funny? Like, that's not funny to me. Like, what the fuck does hydration have to do with this? If you're a trios team and you want to go for the trios championship, okay, I understand the story and the direction you're going to take me in, but is a little subtlety, intricacy, and nuance of hydration and chugging a fucking mini water bottle supposed to be like, ooh, that was funny? It's nothing. It's just silliness for the sake of silliness. It's comedy that they think is actually funny comedy. That's when right. it's not.
That's right. And I always say, RVE, I always say, if you're not AEW, if you're not in on the joke, then you're not going to get it. You got to be in on the joke. You got to be an insider. And I don't think you are RVE. I think you're an outsider. You do your bashing of them. But don't you feel if you're not really in on the joke, there are certain things you're just not going to get about this company.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I mean, it's weird because we're kind of into our frustrations with the company instead of celebrating what was honestly a good night of wrestling right now. But no, I mean, yeah. This was all up until last night. I mean, this was all I had to say about AEW, really, other than they had a couple of decent dynamites recently, which were like the first two in months. But I mean,
well, no, to his credit, Tony Khan has the best roster in wrestling. I wish he'd do better with it. That's all. I'll leave it at that.
I agree. I mean, and that's, I guess, why I'm frustrated at who's getting, like, Wheeler Yuta and Daniel Garcia. And I didn't realize Action Andretti was even still around.
Exactly.
Or this hydration thing. I haven't watched Collision in months because football season was going on. But I mean, the one thing I do, truthfully, up until last night, there had been two bright spots for me. And I need to say that for 18 years, I told people one certain thing. And now, motherfuckers, I get to say I told every single one of you so that Christian Cage is better than Adam Copeland in every way. And he is. Because that man is fantastic and is doing the best work of his career.
Oh, wholeheartedly agree. I think with you have this badass character, this evil, this maniacal character, somewhat delusional character of being like that father figure to Nick Wayne. And plus you get a woman like Shayna Wayne, who is like just MILF city, if you will. That MILF when you're talking like American Pie MILF. When you have the beautiful Miss Shayna Wayne. And I mean, you have Nick Wayne looking like an emo kid coming from the Family Values Tour. You know what I'm saying? But I mean, okay, there's another one. Like, we talk about the push of Nick Wayne. Skinny dude who does a lot of cool moves. There's really nothing to Nick Wayne. Again, no disrespect to Nick Wayne, but there's nothing that makes me go, man, fucking Billy Badass over here wants to kick my ass. Ooh, I'm afraid of Nick Wayne. He's ready. We're ready to scrap. But nonetheless, I digress. Christian Cage, Daniel Garcia, the right guy won. Christian hit the unprettier. Daniel Garcia worked over the leg, smart from the scientific psychology standpoint. Then Christian coming down for the 1-2-3. Right guy went over. Christian Cage is the man. Ever since his days and 10 years, even in WWE, from TNA now and onward, this is, like you mentioned, some of the best stuff of his career, and I'm here for the ride.
Perfectly said. And yes, Nick Wayne is another perfect example. Seriously. Put this guy on Ring of Honor. He's 19 years old. He's got plenty of time. I get what they're doing, but he doesn't belong on TV right now.
He should be wrestling Brody Lee Jr. at this point.
They're about the same size. And I mean, Jesus Christ, man. I mean, here, I forgot the fucking Daddy Magic or whatever the fuck this guy's name came out. And Jake
Matt Bernard.
Yes, the wasting of Jake Hager and... I mean, good God, Mama Wayne is bigger than Matt Menard here. Literally, she's taller. It's just, you know, I don't understand some of this. But the match was good. Daniel Garcia, to his credit, can work. He's nothing spectacular to be getting the push that he is. And I'm so glad that he was not the one that ended Christian's reign, because I honestly expected it last night.
Well, with the way Tony Khan's been doing it, as well as like Daniel Garcia's just been like, literally his move is like a jackknife pin. Like, he's mostly been winning with a jackknife pin. Oh my God, he won. Oh my God, he won. That anticipation. And then you have him coming out like after one of the dynamites off air, like, you're going to be seeing more of this guy in 2024. And it's just like, he's so infatuated. Thank you. He's so infatuated with these guys. It's like when at the media scrum very quickly, like when he's like, Sting, this is the best night of my life. And I was there and I saw him in 1988. And I'm like, come on, man. Dude, like, why? Like,
oh, man, that's pretty good. Great impression.
But he's ridiculous. And he was just like, Sting, this is the best night of my life in AEW. We got another pay-per-view next month, AEW Dynasty. And I'm like, fucking hell, man, why?
He was on, they had him on the local radio show down here.
Does he sound like this?
He did, with Dan Lebatard. You guys know Dan Lebatard?
Yes. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah. So Lebatard, he got fired from ESPN Radio and has his own little thing now for a few years. But he's pretty controversial. And they had Tony Khan on, and Tony Khan refused. This was when right around the CM Punk exit.
I listened to this. Yes.
You heard it, right? And yep. They were mocking him because he wouldn't answer a fucking single question. Right. And every answer was, oh, we're great. We're great. We're doing great. We have a pay-per-view coming up. We sold out London. We have 50,000 people. And the guy would not give a single straight-up answer.
To add on to what Goldberg was saying there, they got to the point about CM Punk, and Tony Khan keeps dodging the question, dodging it. Then he goes, Tony, how about you just admit to us? Were you scared? Were you afraid for your life? And he goes, yeah, I pretty much scared the hell out of me. And I'm like, you mother.
It was great. Great job by the host. They did not back down.
That's awesome.
That's good.
And I will say, too, you don't see a lot of selling in AEW, but Christian Cage is still a master of selling wrestling, selling pain, the leg injury, et cetera. But another master, we have the second match of the very pointless championship. Now, is this now what the Ring of Honor World Championship, this Triple Crown thing?
It's a mixture of Ring of Honor, New Japan, All Japan, some sort of international-based.
So it's on the world-class athletes of Eddie Kingston and his 12 packs of cigarettes a day against Brian Danielson. And as much as I'm not big on Eddie Kingston, that was the best match of his career. Again, we've been shitting on it, but this was one of the best pay-per-views I've seen in a very long time, and I will put it up there. It is by far the best AEW show I've seen. Danielson and Kingston, it was a great match. I saw a little excerpt where some fucking douchebag put up a clip of, like, the bullshit slapping, you know, the little tiny sequence that, you know, people make fun of.
Yes.
But he does do that far too often.
He does. But this was, I mean, right towards the end of the match where these guys had busted their ass, and it's like trying to make it look like shit when it's like, show the whole fucking match, and really that little stupid excerpt means nothing in this. But wrong guy won, in my opinion. What I understand, like, Brian Danielson does not want to win titles here, but I think he should have went over. Goldberg, what'd you think on this one?
This is going to be the resident hater, because I like Eddie Kingston in a way where maybe in a different role. Like I don't like him as a champion in any regard. Because the guy can talk his face off, and I like him in that regard, but I don't buy him, obviously, as somebody who's beating Bryan Danielson even. But I mean, they've turned Bryan Danielson into almost just another guy. He's just another guy really at this point. But I didn't hate the match. I thought it was a good match, but I'm talking, I guess, overall, I don't really want to see Eddie Kingston with a belt around his waist. But the match itself, if we're just talking Revolution, it was a good match. I'm not gonna hate on the match. It was a good match.
So I will say this about this. I've been watching Bryan Danielson, and my first event I ever saw him was Ring of Honor in 2005, where he won the Ring of Honor's World Heavyweight Championship against James Gibson, a.k.a. Jamie Noble. I mean, the guy is, from a technician standpoint, he worked over the arm, worked over the leg. Bryan Danielson going to have a great match with a freaking broom, and Eddie Kingston. Yep. Very much like his idol, Ju Nakayama, Bermuda, Bahama, come on, pretty mama. He did his thing where it's just very much the slaps, the All Japan, New Japan style. He likes that strong style, so he equates it, he quips into his moveset. So, I mean, they fed off each other. I thought the match was nice. As far as him getting the win, I think this was very much reminiscent to where he beat Cesaro for the Ring of Honor World Championship. And then he finally, after the years of beef and the feud and the interaction that they've had, he shook his hand. And now this is very reminiscent of the Cesaro-Claudio Castagnoli feud. Now we did it with Bryan Danielson after the years of everything on the indies. So the story made sense. The match was good. As far as Bryan Danielson, he's very much reminiscent to what we've had with Adam Copeland. It was such a big deal, and then he falls by the wayside. And when you had Saraya came in, such a big deal, falls by the wayside. Ruby Soho, such a big deal, falls by the wayside. It's everything that he does that Tony Khan books and hypes it up. It's going to be the same thing when Mercedes Moné comes in. It's going to be the same thing when Kazuchika Okada comes in. I mean, it's just, it's predictable. It's very much same rinse, lather, repeat with the Tony Khan of how he does these doggone surprises. But as far as the match of Eddie Kingston, Bryan Danielson, I enjoyed it, and it made sense storyline-wise. It was what it was from that perspective.
Kingston, just another guy that I look at, and is why is this the guy that they are giving the push to? I understand he can do a decent promo. He's a walking New York stereotype is what he is. And I guess that appeals to some. He's the king of the bums, legitimately.
As a New Yorker, I can attest with that stereotype and looking at those individuals. So I get it.
Lucky, I didn't know you were from New York. I hear the accent now, though.
I'm originally from Long Island, New York. Yes.
Oh, nice. Very nice. My girlfriend's brother lives in Long Island.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Larkin is a Larkin and MJF, the resident Long Islands. Both of them dastardly handsome sons of bitches themselves. Now we move on to the 8-man scramble. In my opinion, this was the worst match of the night. There were meat chants at times. I've never heard Sean Stasiak be so fucking over in my life, but he was there, and man. Yeah. Dante Martin with he had 3 botches. The man, my gripe with this, I think Wardlow should have been the one to go over. Of course, that's what it is. My gripe is all these fucking douchebags booing Jericho over some bullshit ass fucking allegations by some hack journalist. But Dante Martin was in instead of Pentagon, and that pisses me off. And I will at one point, I mean, this is really all I have to say about this match, is Dante Martin should not have been in there over Pentagon. I'm so disgusted in the way that Lance Archer, Pentagon, Brian Cage, and Jeff Hardy, hate me on that all you want to, are booked by this piece of shit douchebag fucking on the goddamn cusp of autism, Tony Khan. That's all I'm going to say. Big thing for Wardlow. Larkin, go ahead.
So while Raven Effect is talking about Tony Khan being on the spectrum, I will discuss the 8-man scramble. So I will say this. You look at the guys and you analyze the sect and the cipher who was in there. Chris Jericho, the powerhouse Hobbs, have that dynamic with the Don Callis family. Lance Archer just came out of mothballs. Hook, no. Brian Cage, unfortunate, but no. Magnus, not that Magnus, but Magnus from CMLL, who we don't even know. It's just like, oh my, and just Tony's like, we got a CMLL guy. Isn't it great that we have this relationship? And then we have Dante Martin, who, okay, whatever. So if Wardlow did not win this match, it would not make sense because he's cutting these intense promos. He's looking to get back into the limelight. I mean, a Wardlow Samoa Joe, there's history there from their battles with the TNT Championship. So you capitalize that and put them together and have that synergy that they have. So it made sense for Wardlow to win this year, trying to build up the Undisputed Kingdom. So here you are, you have one of their powerhouses, their big guys, if you will, that high octane aerial assault, but I can also kill you with one single punch or a kick or a clothesline, what have you. Wardlow was the guy. This is war. The right person won, but the match was just kind of meh because you had guys like Miro and Keith Lee who were injured, so they had to do something, and Tony's like, we're going to put them all on the card. So yeah, Wardlow, I'm happy that he won.
Goldberg, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that sentiment. For me, it's like, obviously the right guy won. Wardlow had to win this match, but like you're just taking Lance Archer and he's back with Jake the Snake. Like, when's the last time those two were even on television?
Collision. They tried to do a thing with the Righteous from Ring of Honor and tried to put them as a group, and then that kind of fell by the way.
So if you're not in on the joke, again, you're not going to know. You're not watching Collision. You're not going to get on a pay-per-view that Lance Archer is back and Jake the Snake's managing him. And it's just, I don't know. RV, I know you didn't like this match too much. This was the one you liked least, but I definitely the right guy won the match.
Oh yeah, and I mean, and you know what? Larkin brought up a good point there. There should have been touches. Is we've had two Dynamites in a row where Wardlow is he's cutting some killer promos, to be honest with you, man. Like the growth of Wardlow is there. The dude looks like a star. We're talking heavyweight guys. I mean, he looks the part. He looks like he could kick the shit out of you. He squashed the fucking goat of AEW and MJF. I mean, there's some interesting things, and truthfully, when MJF comes back, the company needs to revolve around him because you have so much setup with him and the Undisputed Kingdom, with Wardlow, with Swerve now, with Samoa Joe, even with Hangman. I'm
but anxious. Are they booking Wardlow the same exact way that they booked him in the past? Isn't this the same literal thing? Like he's back being the lackey of
yes,
Adam Cole. Cole. He just won a title shot and he's gonna turn on his group, and I mean, isn't it the same shit?
This is the exact same thing as everything that went down with everything, yeah, with MJF and everything that went on there.
You're right. No, but we didn't need to see this again. He should have taken the next step last time. We don't need to see the same thing again this time.
Well, that's how Tony Khan rolls. And also the fact that we're having Wardlow against a guy like Commander, and everything has to be 50-50 booking. We can't have anybody not look strong. I'm like, he's fucking 150 pounds. Let the man squash him. It's okay, Tony. Not everybody has to get in 50% at 50%. Stop it. Like, friggin', I'm watching friggin' Atlantis Jr., who, again, video package. Oh, by the way, Chris Jericho challenged Atlantis Jr. because him and his father wrestled back at CMLL. That's something that's something you build for, like, a few weeks, and you touch upon.
Correct.
It. Not like, oh, by the way, here it is.
Yeah, I will. Yeah. I was going to say, I popped for a split second when I saw the name Magnus pop up, and then I realized, oh, wait, never mind.
Again, yes, never mind. So did I. Same thing. And shout out Magnus, who, what is he? He's a general manager, right?
It's a SmackDown GM.
Wait, and shout out to him giving Sting his props on Twitter. Magnus gave a little tribute to Sting, who I will never forget when Sting was in TNA, said that Magnus was going to be the next star in professional wrestling. Yeah. Obviously, that didn't pan out, but
yeah. I mean, They even acknowledged it tonight, like very, very briefly, but on Raw tonight, Michael Cole, and they acknowledged Sting as being his last match, and they gave him some nice heartwarming.
You know what? That's funny that they did that. I didn't know they did that, but that's funny given that Kevin Nash claimed he couldn't be there.
Right.
I mean, if you'd have noticed in the Heelcast chat, someone posted this in here earlier, but you know.
Oh, is that you?
Dave even didn't Larkin, for crying out loud. I don't know.
Might have been me.
Did you? Okay. I'm horrible. I should have seen that.
I actually didn't even get a chance to click the link. I just saw it glazed by and I was like, hell, I'll be damned. I didn't see that coming. But talking about turning on Adam Cole, the next match, we saw the return of Kyle O'Reilly. Legitimately looked like he has been on a 40 fucking painkiller binger and has not slept in 3 of those days. But we got the Roderick Strong. So, and dude in Griggs had told us, I don't know if you noticed it in the chat, but it said something went, someone must have ran long or something. It might have been just to get Kyle O'Reilly out. But they said, so Griggs said that a red light flashed during this match saying to hurry up. And then you got the quick finish with Strong going over clean, which I didn't expect. I think it's a good thing to do to get the Undisputed Kingdom back going because they need to be a big deal. They have dropped the ball with this big fucking shock, right? But I don't know if you guys are aware, but Orange Cassidy was milking a back injury. Excalibur didn't mention it 20 times.
No, did you know that Orange Cassidy had hurt back? Yes. And I mean, dude, my exact sentiments on this is going to be the same at Wardlow. Like, if Roddy did not win this, it would make no sense. The Messiah of the Backbreaker. You're establishing the Undisputed Kingdom. If they don't, they clearly have stated they want all the gold. You have Taven and Bennett as the Ring of Honor tag champs. You have Roddy now as the international champ. And you have Wardlow going for the world title with Adam Cole watching all of this manifest. So, I mean, it made sense. Again, this is another one where I'll say the right guy went over.
What are the odds that Adam Cole, I mean, first of all, how long could he possibly be out with that ankle? What are the odds he asked Wardlow for that title shot?
I mean, I think that's probably where they're going. Again, very similar to what we had with the with MJF and all of them in the Pinnacle. So, it's very reminiscent of what they've done like 3 years ago.
Yeah. I like Roderick Strong. I'm glad he won that match. And yeah, clearly he's going to try to rebuild this big bad group that they were supposed to be. So I guess no better way to start than here. So, but I couldn't care less about the row tag championships. That does nothing for me.
I like Bennett a lot. I liked him as a Miracle Mike Bennett. I actually liked him in Ring of Honor when everyone used to chant he can't wrestle. So, here's what I wanted to ask. So Larkin, because I know you know this ROH and then especially the NXT history better than we do. Mm-hmm. I would assume O'Reilly would just align with these guys. Does he have like a bad history with Taven and Bennett? I mean, I didn't see that coming with Kyle O'Reilly. I would have thought he would join the group. I don't know if he was crying because he made his return, but like that man looked like absolute dog shit.
It's very reminiscent of NXT during the pandemic era when Adam Cole turned on, you know, Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong was the last one he finally turned on, and he turned on Bobby Fish, and that broke up the Undisputed Era. And Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole have that history, not just from NXT, but in Ring of Honor, going for the World's Heavyweight Championship and, I mean, wrestling in New Japan together. So they become the best of friends and the worst of enemies, so to speak. So, I mean, you have the dynamic, okay, wait a minute. If I join this guy, he's turned on me before. What makes him think that he won't turn on me again? And you have Taven and Bennett there. And I mean, originally before like all this happened with Taven and Bennett getting involved, we had Bobby Fish, we had Kyle O'Reilly, we had Adam Cole, we had, you know, Roderick Strong. That, when you think of the Undisputed Era or something that is undisputed, you think of those gentlemen. So, I mean, it's like, can he trust Taven and Bennett? Can he trust Adam Cole knowing the history that they've had? How do I know he's not going to turn on me? So there's many different variables. Okay, he whispered something in Roddy Strong's ear. What did he whisper in his ear? So, I mean, it's just mind, it's just thinking, it's processing. Okay, these are my boys, but where do I stand? You know what I'm saying? So there's that whole kind of like self-doubt or kind of like a small glimmer of doubt of like, hey, you know, I've been down this road before. So, I mean, that's kind of what they're basing their history off of.
All right, appreciate that. I didn't recognize who the fuck he was. I was like, is that Heath Slater? Like, who is this? And then it was like, wow, that's actually Kyle O'Reilly. He looks terrible. Granted, I mean, not everyone can be a 10 out of 10 like myself, but come on, Kyle, you didn't look you did not look good, for fuck's sake. Anything else on the international championship match
before we move on? No, I said my piece. Goldberg.
Where does Orange Cassidy go from here? The guy's that's a superstar. Where does he go from here?
Probably
playing pocket pool.
Jesus. No, they're probably going to do, like, this is like Orange Cassidy's division, because that title means more to him than anything. So we're probably going to get more rematches for the international championship. Woohoo.
Okay, more Orange Cassidy.
Yeah, don't hate him, but I'm like, it's I know what you're doing here. And it's another one. Tony Khan is like, you will have some Orange Cassidy. You will love Orange Cassidy. Like, that's how it is.
He at least can, you know, and as much and as
he can. Yeah.
He's put on some damn good matches. As much as I don't like him and find him to be a mockery, the man can fucking work and put on a show.
He should come up with a new gimmick then and be taken seriously.
Yeah, but then he can't be indie.
I mean, his song literally, and I agree with Raven about his wrestling capabilities, but I mean, that's the reason why we have Jane, because Tony's like, oh my God, he had it on the indies. We're going to get him on the indies. I mean, that's a song he used on the indies. So we're going to use it here. I'm going to buy the rights.
Larkin is a goddamn fucking fountain of information we would never have. Now, speaking of indies, just kidding. Nothing about these guys are indie. Mox and Claudio. Okay, never mind. Mox has got some real indie shit. But that, regardless, okay? Coming out in the Road Warrior gear was fucking badass. FTR, the best tag team in the world today. Great match. They put a good one on Dynamite. I had picked Mox and Claudio to win this originally until I realized FTR was from North Carolina and thought, oh, fuck, I'm wrong on my little pick'em thing. Great match. I think this might end up being the tag team championship final coming up, but I really enjoyed this match. I knew it was going to be good. Our guys were right by the mother and I think the father of Cass Wheeler. So, Goldberg, what did you think about this? And we'll kick it over to Larkin.
This was a good match. I enjoyed the match. I think the wrong team won, but I really thought this was a great match and really good. And I don't want to turn everything into a negative. So I'm going to leave it that I think it was a really good match.
So I originally, like Raven was like, okay, FTR's got to win because they're in North Carolina. But no, I mean, it's a tale of just tag team wrestling. Like Moxley and Claudio are those guys that like to be the hard hitting and back breaking. Then you have FTR who have the psychology, can work over each other, but they can also be in your face. And I think these two gelled very nicely. And I like the sequence at the end where they both, you know, he passes out the blood, you know, the crimson mask, so to speak. And then you have that stare at the end. They don't even say anything. They just look at each other like the nod of approval, the nod of respect. And I mean, much like Raven said, if they're going to do this tag team title, you know, tournament, that would be great to have those final two, because FTR want those tag titles. And you've solidified the Blackpool Combat Club, that being Claudio and Moxley, as a very dominant duo, a very much like their attire Road Warriors-esque, like, we're going to beat the crap out of you and we take no prisoners, so to speak. And that represented what we saw in the Carolinas and how over the Road Warriors were. So, I mean, everything worked. The synergy was there. The grit was there and the passion and the hard work was there. I really enjoyed the matchup.
Yeah, I did too. I mean, I'm not going to say wrong team won, because I don't think there was a wrong choice in this one. Either team going over would have been awesome. The other reason I thought Mox and Claudio might win is because FTR had them beat on Dynamite or Collision. I did watch one episode of Collision recently. FTR, you knew this was going to be good. And Claudio is severely underrated. That's all I have to say. I'm down for another one.
Well, he left WWE because he thought he was underrated. And some, how long has he been in AEW?
Which one? Mox? Which one?
Claudio.
Yeah, about a year.
Yeah, and he's still underrated.
No, he's very fucking good though. You know, like, he's not.
But he's.
I don't think either can be used.
But he's he hasn't been used right, because he also could be in like a heavyweight title picture at this point, and hasn't been booked as such.
I mean, with the heavyweight title, like, I remember when he won the Ring of Honor title, I'm like, okay, that's cool. But then, like, when he immediately lost it to, like, Jericho, and I'm like, okay, sure. And I mean, I understood why, but I'm like, yeah. I'm like, they haven't used it much in the World Heavyweight Championship, like, much like Goldberg said. It's just, like, it's just tag team for him, because Tony Khan sees him. Like, you know, when I used to go to Ring of Honor, I saw him and Chris Hero in the Kings of Wrestling tag team. So they want to, you know, put him back in the tag team. So there you go.
And Tony Khan, it's, you take a spoiled, rich brat who's never been told no in his life, who also happens to have unlimited cocaine, and also is the picture-perfect stereotype neckbeard fucking, you know, just stereotype neckbeard fucking wrestling fan, like Indie Mark, AEW, New Japan, Ring of Honor fan, and that is Tony Khan in a nutshell. And unfortunately, or AEW is the only brand I can honestly stand to watch, really, at this point. Like, he's never going to grow the business until he actually gets someone to help with storylines, writers, etc. Because it's all over. It's a cokehead's fucking manifesto here, and it gives cocaine a bad name.
I mean, to go off of Raven's point, I mean, talking about the marks and all that, I mean, the prime example is we just celebrated the 2-year anniversary of him talking about, no, it's not Shane. I bought Ring of Honor. That's what we just celebrated 2 years of, so, yeah.
Wow. What a great thing Ring of AEW Elevation has become. Or Dark Elevation, sorry, I botched that, but...
Yes.
Speaking of botching, or a lack thereof, match of the year candidate already, Will Ospreay against Konosuke Takeshita.
Raven Effect, you forgot one match.
Did I? What women's match? Did that come on first?
Yeah, Tony Storm and Deanna.
All right. Well, I had them mixed up. I still had it on there, but let's all right. Let's talk about that women's match then. I think I don't know if the right person went over or not. Until one thing I gotta say is I sent the video in, but Tony Storm on the fucking media scrum.
It's hilarious.
They need to get that onto TV, because that was fantastic. That was fucking hilarious. And they need to get that onto TV. I swear to God, this girl would be the most over thing in women's wrestling if they could do that. I truthfully feel the only reason that she went over instead of putting it on Deanna was because of who's going to debut in 2 nights. And they can't, obviously, it's they're going to put the belt on, what is it, Mercedes Moné now? Is that what they call it?
Mercedes Moné.
I mean, clearly, she can't go in and fight the face champ. They're going to put the belt on her right away. I kind of wanted to see Deanna win it, but it's like, logically, they're going to put Sasha right at the top. After seeing Tony Storm on that media scrum, man, I'm even more sold on the girl. Larkin?
I'll take this one first, because for those who have not seen the media scrum, Tony Storm was in character. She said the line of, you know what, Anthony, you might hate me for saying this after, but I have to say it. Then she pretty much told everybody in the ranking system, fuck off, there's a ranking system now, so get in line. And she said the line once more of, Wendi Richter, I'm going to fuck you up. And it was hilarious. And just, she pretty much did a state of a speech of, if you will, pretty much saying, Deanna Purrazzo, you brought the best out of me, yada, 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 and I hope you go back to Impact. And I died when she said that. So
the other thing, when she goes, Sean Excalibur Mooney. And,
Tony, come on. It's great.
Telling Tony Khan not to touch her when they hug. It's just, yeah.
He's like, and she's like, bring it in, Tony, bring it in. I know you want to bring it in. Bring it in. Like, Jesus. This woman is amazing. Okay. So the match. I like the fact that we got the two friends, the story of, you know, Stardom and the tattoos, as Tony Storm calls them, the tattoos, not the tattoos, but the tattoos, and everything that went into this. I mean, we saw the fact that pretty much what she stated on Dynamite was, okay, you want some of the old Tony Storm? I'll give you the old Tony Storm. And that led to our finish of Luther gets involved, takes out Luther. Then here comes Mariah May, dressed like old school Tony Storm that we had seen in NXT and NXT UK and on the WWE program, with the backwards hat and the jacket. So they went to the old school Tony Storm, but it was Mariah May dressed like Tony Storm. And then Tony Storm gets the win over Deanna when Deanna had it won with the armbar. And 1, 2, 3, Tony Storm's retains, and then we're going to get her and Mercedes Moné. So the match served its purpose, but Tony Storm is hilarious.
Goldberg.
Yeah, no, I love Toni Storm. I think she's the best. Obviously, she's the best thing in women's wrestling today. Any company given, she's phenomenal. She's funny. She's talented. She's got it all. She's really at the top of the women's division in any company. And her retaining was good. And I don't know. Deonna feels like she lost a step since coming from TNA, in my opinion. But yeah, I'm glad Toni retained.
And again, man, as good as she is, I swear to God, if they could do what she does at the press conference or whatever you want to call it, if they could get that onto TV, she'd be that much better. She would be untouchable. So now I digress back into match of the fucking year so far, and obviously top that the rest of these next 10 months with Ospreay and Takeshita. I've been big on Takeshita. I've said for when that guy came on, I said, this guy's fucking, this dude's good. I understand nobody cares. It's just some random Japanese wrestler or whatever. They've done something with him. He's fucking fantastic. I understand it's not The Rock. I understand it's not the build, the storyline of Cody versus Roman 2. But you will not see match quality, anything at WrestleMania that will fucking top that shit. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not a big Ospreay guy until I saw that fucking match. You know, I've seen him, but I haven't been. Whatever. That was fucking incredible. That was a goddamn banger. I don't buy into Dave Meltzer shit, but if anything's a 5-star match, that was that. Goldberg, I'll go to you, then to Larky.
Okay. Yeah, no, this was, I agree with you. It was a great match. It was a great match. I have to throw in my one piece of negativity. I didn't like the no selling. It just, when it's fast paced and they're doing these moves and it's just constant running and running and running, somebody's got to sell something to make it believable for the rest of the match. And I don't know. I didn't like the no selling, but the overall match was, it did feel like, it felt like it could have been a main event, like of any other card. And yeah, they put on a great show, but I don't know. The only thing that bothered me was the no selling.
To go off of Goldberg's point, Papa Lark and I were watching AEW Revolution, and Papa Lark, once Ospreay like kicked out of one and it just came out and just ran right out to Kesha, he's like, yep. Okay, he should not be doing that. I'm like, I know. It's strong style. He goes, I get it, but I'm like, it's ridiculous. I'm like, I know. So Papa Lark was in agreement with you on that, Mr. Goldberg. So yes. So very much to those sentiments, and I will say this, Will Ospreay and Konosuke Takeshita, you have someone from DDT Pro Wrestling, Konosuke Takeshita. Will Ospreay and him, they have mentioned, and he mentioned on the media scrum that him and Konosuke Takeshita have teamed with each other, but they've never really gone one-on-one, and boy, oh my goodness, did we see the chops, the kicks, the strikes, that friggin' powerbomb into the corner where his friggin' back, oh my God, the lump that he had, holy hell, and then we got to see more of the strikes to the back, the running chop to the back, the Storm Zero, Konosuke Takeshita with the running knee, and everything that they did was precision and synergy. You could tell they worked together. You can tell that they just have that chemistry, much like we saw based off, okay, the Don Callis family, what can we do to top what we've done? We're going to have our two guys wrestle each other, a brotherly battle, so to speak. If you want to quote Will Ospreay, competition, bruv, B-R-U-V, bruv. And Will Ospreay gets the win. And I mean, Don Callis coming out, loving it, loving these guys, the competition, checking on both of these guys. I mean, this is what it was. It was just to go out there and have a great doggone match, and these guys did it. So, I mean, I look forward to seeing where we go from here. Is there going to be a possible thing where Will Ospreay turns more to the babyface side and we have some conjunction at the function, if you will, you know, malfunction at the junction, so to speak, with Will Ospreay and Konosuke Takeshita, and Will Ospreay leaves the Don Callis family? We shall see, but I'm here for it. And we just teased Kyle Fletcher, who was a part of United Empire, Aussie Open, if you will, Ring of Honor television champion. Where does him and Will Ospreay go? I mean, they hugged, they did the whole thing. They shook each other's hands, they raised each other's hands. But the competition even goes from Sunday to Wednesday with him and Kyle Fletcher. So I built to that.
I don't like that they're doing Fletcher and Ospreay to start and then to do it so soon. And then what do we have? Do we have Ospreay against Hobbs after that too?
I'm guessing.
And Larkin, I'm with you. I feel we'll probably see Ospreay break away from the Don Callis family. And Callis is such a heat magnet, man. It's tough you got to have some kind of a big stable in there. You got to have some big thing. And Takeshita is not going to be there. I will say this, 2025, whether that be Revolution or Double or Nothing, you have the match of the future of this company between MJF and Will Ospreay. Needs a main event, one of these events at some point.
Rough.
Next year. Goldberg, anything to say before we move on to the World Championship match?
No.
Larkin, anything else for you, sir?
Just bruv, because that's all I keep hearing is bruv, B-R-U-V, bruv.
You say bruv for your guy Ospreay, I'll tell you, I'm better than you, and you know it.
There you go.
I miss MJF. So, the world title match, I think the crowd, I felt the swerve thing was not organic, but I really think it picked up steam. I think the crowd wanted the new champ to be Swerve. I think everyone knew Hangman wasn't winning. It was Swerve or it was Joe. I really feel at this, what is it, Dynasty next month. I think unless they're doing Wardlow and Joe, I think they're going to pull the trigger. Kind of like, I think they didn't put the title on Swerve because why shit on Swerve's night when it's Sting is going to take all, you know, Sting is going to be the headliner. Everything's going to be around Sting. I don't know if that's the reason why. The match was okay. I guess it was disappointing for me. And maybe just because I was still buzzing off the match before it. But Goldberg, what did you think of it?
I actually enjoyed the match overall. It felt like an old school championship match to me, almost like a TNA-esque three-way match for a title. Like it was. I thought it was well put together. But you're right. I never thought at any point Hangman was going to win this match. For me, it was either Swerve or Joe. And then you texted this earlier, RVE, that Swerve will probably win on a night when it's not Sting's retirement. And that makes a lot of sense. Also, Joe just won the title relatively recently. So I didn't really think at any point he'd lose. But did the ending not feel a little anticlimactic to either one of you?
It made sense for the fact that Hangman Adam Page was so obsessed with Swerve not winning the title that he himself lost, but also at the same time, they noted it on commentary. It's like, why did he tap so quickly? Was it the fact that he was in excruciating pain, or was it because he didn't want Swerve to win it? So,
but doesn't that take away from Joe?
Oh, agreed. Oh, agreed wholeheartedly. And I mean, I'm happy he won because I mean, Joe just won the doggone title in December, but also at the same time, it's like you're focusing more on that storyline. But I'm like, you can also make it of like, okay, Hangman lost, but Swerve didn't. So you can go back to Swerve and Joe, but it more focuses on Swerve and Hangman as opposed to, oh, Joe just had another incredible title defense. So the heat gets off of Joe and it gets more towards Hangman and Swerve, which we've seen a billion gajillion times already. And the future just be done.
You know, I agree. It was anticlimactic to me, and maybe that's why I'm kind of down on it. But I do think that the Hangman tapping to prevent Swerve from getting it, in a way, is as much as one of us pushes and talks about storytelling so damn hard, it was pretty damn good storytelling, in my opinion, for what it was doing. Granted, Swerve and Hangman have great chemistry. I don't necessarily want to see another one. It's going to happen, though, as Larkin is alluding to. The slow turn for Hangman is being done pretty well. Obviously, him being aligned with the Bucks, he's going to turn heel. But I'm losing my train of thought here. I'm just glad I don't have to see more soy boy shit as a world champion. Joe has got to be the most like paper transitional champion. I think he only won the belt because they really didn't fucking have anyone else they could put it on, with MJF literally having to need to drop it.
All I could say of this is every time I see Hangman Adam Page now just on the sidebar, I look at him like he's friggin' Burt Reynolds and Smokey and the Bandit with that porn stash, man. Oh my goodness.
You just need some more of that hot, hot Sally Field tail.
Yes.
Goldberg, anything before we get to what you prefer, which is 60-year-old men headlining every event?
Nope. I've been waiting 18 years for this moment.
And truthfully, man, no one deserved to headline this motherfucker more. I don't think there's any legend in wrestling that deserves his flowers more than Sting. There's like nothing bad that can be said about Sting, and seeing crazy old man Sting and all these crazy jumps and bumps and shit that he's done over the past, God, it's really been 3 or 4 years now. I love it. I know there's a sigh for a reason. I get that. I'm not everyone loves it, but I just, man, what a fucking night. The video package, the It's Showtime one last time. His son's coming out there. I will give some real respect to, I'm not a Young Bucks fan, but those motherfuckers can put on some classics at times. And that is legitimate heat they got a couple weeks ago, beating up his kids. Man, I was in love with this match. I was so on the edge because you didn't know if he was going to go over. It was one where, like, you think they're going to put him over, but, you know, he's leaving. He's a champ. Like, are they really going to do it? I got a newfound respect for Darby. There's so much. And you know what, man? Goldberg's been waiting 18 years. Let's let him go. And then, Larky, you follow up, and I'll kind of chime in with whatever. But, man, I'm still buzzing from this.
All right. So first, I'm going to give my couple pieces of negativity, which are not much with this match. But one thing is, what were the Young Bucks doing prior to this match storyline-wise?
They were becoming the evil VPs and just doing...
Before that.
Oh, nothing. Just they with Kenny Omega. So, yeah.
So Sting kind of decided, probably told Tony Khan, it's going to be my last match. They decided the Young Bucks would be his last opponent, and then they kind of came out of nowhere to be these dastardly heels, like Dudley Do-Right-esque heels. But so that's just my gripe with leading up to the match. The actual match itself and the presentation of the match to me was so beautifully done. And RVE just touched on the entrance. I could rewatch that entrance a million times over with his kids. Coming out, and for a second, did either one of you think Surfer Sting was real Sting for a second?
No? Yeah, I think that was I think that was Steve Borden Jr., not Garrett. Garrett was the one with the NWO Wolfpack Sting, but yeah, no, he looked exactly like Surfer Sting.
Yeah.
Oh
my
goodness. Do you know what I said? I said, "God damn, Dustin Rhodes put some weight back on." I thought it was Dustin.
You know
for
what?
A second.
That may be fair. However, Surfer Sting and Steve Borden Jr., if that's who it was, he could have had a career as a wrestler. Guy looked great.
Yeah, they were both football players, both of them.
One looked better than the other, in my opinion, but he looked really good. And they were both flying around the ring at the end of the match. But that entrance and that montage video was so well done and got me so hyped for the match. And the match itself. Listen, I know I mentioned this earlier. My one gripe is the glass. It was unnecessary. It's just for me, it's not something Sting would have ever done. It's not like Mankind retiring. I didn't need to see him go through like glass pieces. Could have seen just a regular tag match rather than a tornado tag. But Darby Allin is out of his fucking mind. I don't know where he goes from here, but he's fucking nuts. And to do what he did is just. I mean, I think we might take for granted a little bit, like, because he's done so many stupid things. But to jump off that ladder and land on a glass piece, I mean, we knew he was going to land straight on that piece and miss. But what the guy is fucking nuts. And it's just Sting being around for this long and going through so many phases of his career. And I guess the last phase of his career is, I guess, crazy Sting, whatever. And it's weird that that's the last phase, given he's obviously the oldest he's ever been at this point. And now he's doing this, but he's just an icon. He's done everything. There's nothing left for him to do. I'm sad he's going to be gone because he's been around literally my entire wrestling fandom. So I'm really going to miss him, but I think if Tony Khan did anything right, it was this presentation. I'll probably wait. I got one more thing to say post match, so I'll let you guys touch on what you thought of the actual match.
The storytelling of the Suns getting involved from the beatdown, I liked. I liked the final Showtime, the entrance going into it. The matchup was pretty much okay. We're going to do the Falcon Arrow to Darby off the stage. Same with Sting getting the suplex. They fought back. Darby does the crazy glass spot, which, much like Goldberg, I was like, okay, all right, I guess. But like, and then Sting took the glass spot. I'm like, it's not something Sting would do. It's like when Chris Jericho was doing the death match with freaking Nick Gage, and I'm like, Chris, you're not Terry Funk ECW 1997 doing the barbed wire match with Sabu. Like, stop it. You're not Terry Funk. So there was that element that I was like, very meh with. But everything else, the storytelling of the Young Bucks just taking down Sting, and then like he would not go down, even getting powerbombed through a freaking table off a ladder. He did not go down. And it just led to just, I know the Ric Flair took a bump, Ricky Steamboat took a bump, and then it just led to at the end Sting hitting the Scorpion Death Drop and the Scorpion Death Lock for the tap out. I mean, for the point of Sting in peril, and then Darby comes back, and then Sting becomes Uber Sting and just rips ass and takes out everybody. It was a nice send off. And I think the right person won, because sometimes when it comes to retirement matches, much like when Kurt Angle lost to Baron Corbin, for God's sake, and that was Kurt's call. But in this particular scenario, Sting needed to go out on a high note. It's Greensboro, North Carolina. This is the same building he had the bout with Ric Flair on the 45-minute draw. So it made sense. So, I mean, it's rich history. It's rich as far as a legacy and a lineage that Sting had. And I did enjoy the match, and I thought it was a good send-off for the icon that is Sting.
Right, like the icon. Dude, I have no complaints with. I thought it was fucking awesome. I understand the glass thing. I think Goldberg said Sting had nothing left to prove. He had nothing left to prove for a long time, and this motherfucker came back in his 60s and was doing these insane fucking stunts and leaps, man. It was just so awesome. Like, every time Sting came on, I was excited. It was so cool to have him and to see him do this stuff for when he had no. He didn't have to do any of this stuff, man. It was so like a new thing of Sting, like fucking crazy senior citizen Sting was awesome. And so like the glass spot, man, like for one, it put the spotlight onto Sting. It gave Darby like a newfound respect for Darby Allin. That dude's back. My God, man. Just see those chunks of tape. Like, he's fucking nuts. I have a new respect for this guy.
And he only had 12 stitches in his back from it.
Well, is that what the number was? I was wondering.
12 stitches.
But, you know, it's like you think in crazy-ass fucking Sting doing these, like, this man's jumping, like, ECW New Jack type of fucking jumps, man. So seeing Sting go through glass, it's like, this version of Sting, it doesn't bother me. Now, is AEW going to get sued? Probably. The glass went into the fucking fans. Our guys were there. Griggs got hit with glass. Dude blocked it with his phone, said a little kid got hit. They were right by the Young Bucks' dad, who said Griggs gave him a napkin because the Young Bucks' dad got cut up from this glass. But man, I loved everything about this match. I honest to God, in a world where heels don't get real heel heat anymore, the Bucks had it when they attacked Sting's fucking kids. They had it during this match, the fuck the Young Bucks chance. It was, man, I cannot say enough great about this. The right person went over. Seeing Sting, the man who literally, the fucking WWE goons hate this man because he's the only goddamn icon that didn't have to fucking go through Vince to get there. And he still could have completely never done that fucking worthless stint in WWE. Sorry, Goldberg. And still been the icon. And it just, man, I can't say enough good about it. They did him right. He really is, as much of a fucking idiot as Tony Khan is, they did Sting right.
Well, just to add on to that point, I mean, on the media scrum, yeah, I thought it was very telling when Tony Khan's like, I just announced your match, and Darby's like, what match? And so you say, where does Darby go from here besides Mount Everest? Literally, while before Darby and Sting came out, because they weren't expecting him to come out because they're both cut up, and of course Darby had just got stitched before coming out, Tony Khan's like, well, a big business, and you know, we're gonna have Darby Allin against Jay White for the first time ever. And then that's how Darby found out when he came out, that we're gonna have Darby Allin and Jay White for the first time ever.
Give Darby a break here.
I know. That's what he's like. I'm like, 10 days later, we're going to have him.
Well, I also think Tony's realizing that Jay White's been booked like a fool for a little while. So,
because he was on the freaking Zero Hour, man. He was in the Zero Hour match.
Yeah. So here's my one gripe, RVE, with the post-match. Did you guys watch the clip of the post-match?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, hate the fact that they cut that off.
Yeah, so here's my only gripe with it. Yeah, cutting it off was ridiculous. That's a fuck up, especially given it's Sting's last fucking match. Like last time, maybe on the mic, who knows whether he'll ever be back. But calling Tony Khan out and letting Tony Khan come out and say shit kind of annoyed me. Did it annoy either one of you or no?
I mean, when you have like Darby Allin's like, we got 3 minutes left on the pay-per-view, and then they cut it off, and then you watch what happened on YouTube. And then, of course, Tony, I got to go out there and just smile, and I got to show my ass. And I'm like, Tony, let the man have his moment. It's not just all about
let him have his moment. My God. Like, it almost felt like it was part of the
greatest pay-per-view of all time.
Yeah.
Greatest pay-per-view.
It was part of the script. He had to call Tony Khan out. Tony Khan had to get his flowers for this. Like, dude, just let Sting have his moment. Go fucking suck your own dick later, like he fucking did with, what was that, a couple weeks ago with how many dynamites, whatever, and he thanked himself.
I like to thank myself for having 300 episodes of Dynamite. This is a historic landmark for the company.
How did I miss it?
Unbelievable. Yeah, he brought himself. He literally fucking patted himself on the back for that. Like, you're supposed to thank the fans, not yourself, first of all. But yeah, I didn't like the idea of Sting calling him out. Like, this is Sting's last match. Ric Flair should have said something. Even Lex Luger should have said something. Somebody else should have said something, rather than calling out Tony Khan, who's just he's just been robbing money from for the past 3 years. Yeah.
Well, Dakota Goldberg's part, it's the I syndrome. I did this for all you fans and Stinger. And
Don't forget, Sting's leaving, but I did this. So stick around and watch me book fucking Daniel Garcia as heavyweight champ.
But yeah, no, that was the only thing that annoyed me, too. I had a great.
That was my only problem with it. Bringing out Tony Khan, that was my only problem.
Yeah, it did annoy the shit. I mean, just, it was like, are you kidding me? He's bringing out Tony Khan? I mean, fuck.
Fucking wasted 2 minutes.
You know what, man? My respect to you, it grew even more for Darby Allin when he's like, I told you I would die in the ring for your
match. Mm-hmm.
That was a good line.
It was pretty good, man. Like, I have never been a fan of Darby Allin, and it's probably just been the way that they push the guy, like, is, you know, the world champion.
No, probably because he's 15 pounds.
That's part of the reason why it bothers me the way he gets pushed. But dude, I'm like, fuck, man, I like Darby now. I've hated him his entire fucking career here. But after last night, man, I'm like,
I liked that he rolled out of the ring and gave Sting with his two boys. I don't know if that was, you know, set up, but I like how he left the ring and let Sting have his kids and hug his kids as it went off the air, or it already went off the air, but as it went off the air for a second time.
And I think you can tell Darby genuinely is appreciative and respectful and knows what he was given with Sting. You know, there's a lot of these guys, you know, it's
he was given 3 years of nothing. But yeah, that's,
you know, I mean, it's like, you know, CM Punk when he goes on his fucking childish rant, though. But he's talking about how Hangman and these people are like, no, I don't want your advice. Terry Funk, I'll do my, you know, it's like you could tell Darby is grateful and appreciative for Sting and the advice there. Now, has he taken any of it? Probably not, but it's the thought that counts, right?
Right.
That's fair, but at some point in that 3 years, Darby should have turned on Sting. At some point. And then they could have made up for this match, but at some point, to get Darby over in some sort of way, something should have happened in this past 3 years. Now, and that has nothing to do with this final match and everything, because it was beautifully done, but I don't know. So Darby, something should have happened in this. Literally, Sting came, stared Darby in the face, decided to team up with him, and they wrote it out for 3 years. That's it.
You know, man. Fuck, I forgot what I was going to say here. Son of a bitch, I forget. Here's what I said. I really wanted it to be FTR instead of Young Bucks, but you know what, man? I wouldn't change a thing, to be honest.
No, I'm fine with it being the Young Bucks. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
It, you know, truthfully, man, like, it was a great night for wrestling, period. It was a great night for wrestling fans. What does have me pissed off and sick to my fucking stomach are these motherfucking douchebags out here that, one, shitting on the event as a whole,
And then the shitting on Sting, who's like the icon, who like, man, Hulk Hogan and Bret Hart are my two favorites ever. There's a lot of shit to talk about these fucking two people, to be honest with. Like, Sting has pretty much done nothing his whole career. I mean, granted, he changed his ways, like, what, through the mid-90s or something?
Yeah, 98, but he became born again.
Yeah, he's been like a fucking solid-ass dude. He's been amazing. It's these WWE fucking tribalist goons who are legitimately, man, like, these are fucking human genital warts, for fuck's sake. Like, that's
literally, you know what? Don't talk about me like that.
It's not you, Goldberg. It's these motherfuckers.
I'm joking.
I know, brother, but you're like, you are the biggest fucking AEW hater we know, right? Personally, that we know. And you're saying this was a good fucking night. It's these dumb fucks, you know, like the WWE junkie type of people out here. Big Ray, a man I respect, shitting on this event, you know, like, it's like, dude, you woke up for the fucking Elimination Chamber and watched the Royal Rumble, and you got the goddamn nerve to shit on this show. Like, motherfucker, you just turned into a show tonight where they called The Rock fucking Diarrhea Dwayne. Like, this company has any fucking audacity to talk about human shit at the moment, but you want to bash AEW? It's just, you know, man, it's these people out here discuss or just shitting on the event in general is stupid, because that was a great fucking night for wrestling, period. I don't give a fuck what your fucking preference is. But that was a good fucking night. But then to shit on Sting, and I've got some, I'm going to read some examples here, okay? This is the shit that has got me peeved. I just want to read a couple things here, gentlemen. Okay. Take me a couple of seconds here. Now, last night, Ric Flair had said Sting is a top 10 wrestler of all time. However, dumb fuck number one named Anthony Santos on Facebook says, "The thing that people won't admit and are in denial about and hate hearing is Sting is popular only because he stayed away from WWE and made it big in the smaller shows. If he would have gotten to WWE when he was younger and stayed, he wouldn't have made it nearly as big as he is now. He's overrated and not really that great of a wrestler." Dumb fuck number two, named Jason Ramirez from Facebook, said Sting had a 35-year career and the last 25 years he was all but forgotten. Sting literally did jack shit for 3/4 of his career, stinking it up in TNA and being Darby Allin's mascot for 3 years. Most wrestling fans today weren't even alive the last time Sting had a good match. Couldn't draw, no memorable feuds past 1997. Boring character that was 2 times ripped off. Sting is a legend the way Kenny Omega is a legend and the Young Bucks are legends. D tier. You're a D-bag and a fucking idiot. Jason Ramirez, you fucking cunt. Fuck these human fucking herpy genital wart pieces of shit. Everyone that was hating on the event or Sting, fuck you. Who cares?
Listen, I can say that, like I said, booking Sting as Darby's grandpa for 3 years, I wasn't a fan of. But that's not going to stop me from crediting how well it was done last night. I think it was really phenomenally done. And I could put Tony's shit booking aside for one night, because I think he honored Sting in a really, it's very hard to book a last match. So I think overall the presentation wise, it was really well done.
Thank you, Gilbert. That's, dude, what you just said is picture perfect of how any and everyone should have saw that match last night, or the event, period.
Tony, I tried to put aside the shit booking of three, because RV, do you agree? I know we're stretching on here, but do either one of you agree that something different could have happened in the past 3 years? Let's put aside how good last night was, but don't you think something different maybe should have happened in the past, just rather than him just babysitting Darby Allin for 3 years? Or is he just at that age that's just what it was?
I think he's just at that age where it was what it was. I mean, you're not going to have him wrestle for the world title and anything like that. So, I mean, him just being that veteran to a younger guy, I mean, it was fine. I didn't really have a problem with it, but it made sense just because he is getting older. So,
but TNA had other ideas for him when he had Joker's thing. And
well, this is also TNA. This is TNA. Like, this is not.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Exactly. So well, over 10 years ago.
It was 10 years ago.
I mean, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
I mean, no, Goldberg, I will 100% agree with you, man. I could have seen more than just Darby Allin. He could have mentored or been involved with other people.
A group. He could have also had a group.
Something, you know, and He's even said, like, I legitimately cannot do singles matches. So he had to do tag team. They could have done other stuff with him, but I agree with you.
Fucking shard of glass last night.
That, you know, they absolutely could have set other stuff aside. They could have, but set all of that shit aside. And what you had was basically the way AEW should be. Like, it was a fucking great show. It didn't matter about the shitty booking. Like, it was a great fucking night for wrestling as a whole.
Yeah.
And you have all these people that are just shitting on it because it's the fucking cool thing to do.
No.
It was not done by the company that was previously ran by the biggest piece of shit in human history.
Yeah.
Listen, and I'm not talking about
you. I agree with you, and I don't agree with you when it comes to most things about wrestling. Like, I don't think Sting's run in WWE was terrible. I think they had the right idea for him. I didn't hate his match with Triple H, but that's not going to stop me from crediting this match. And I think anyone hating on it is comparable to that WWE junkie guy you were going to battle with on Twitter. That guy is just, I mean, anyone like that on either side of whatever company you like, it's so ridiculous, man. It's just so ridiculous. And you can't hate on what the pay-per-view as a whole last night was great. And I am not the AEW fan, so.
Exactly. And that's my point. And you're right. On either side, there's some drain makers and WWE real ones.
Yeah, and, exactly.
I was going to say the last thing to add is just besides the fact that the pay-per-view, I just have to add one last thing because it did come out after AEW Revolution and more today. Santana is no longer in AEW. Oof.
Yeah.
Oh. Another Tony Khan blunder.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them.
How those guys were never, tag team champs, or how in the fuck we never got them and the Lucha Brothers in AEW blows my mind. Man, best of luck to Santana. I think that dude's got a bright future.
God.
If he can get in the right.
Do you guys mind if I ask you one more question real quick?
Sure.
Before we sign off? I want percentages. Mm-hmm. The odds Sting ever shows his face on another company's television. Just shows his face. Appears on, this could be a Hall of Fame induction, appears on another company's television.
99% that says when WWE finally does the right thing and lets Lex Luger in the Hall of Fame, Sting will do the speech.
I was going to say 90-95% depending on who gets inducted into the Hall of Fame. And I mean, Tony Khan even said at his media scrum, he's like, I wish he would have stayed another 6 months so we can retire at Wembley. But I'm like, yeah, I can definitely see him 90-95% if it's like a Hall of Fame thing.
Okay. But let's put aside a Hall of Fame thing. As a storyline, do you think he'll ever appear on television again?
No.
Unless it's with AEW as a commentator or like something to help with Darby.
Well,
he will not be at WrestleMania.
I'm glad to hear you think Luger will get inducted, because Larkin, I don't know if he's my favorite wrestler of all time. I love Luger.
Well, yeah. He's a great choice for a favorite, and I mean, everything that he's done with Flair and just in general from his run in various companies. I mean, look at the Hall of Fame now. I mean, we got Paul Heyman going in now. He was announced as the first inductee, so that's pretty sweet.
Well deserved.
Well, if Lex Luger was not involved with Miss Elizabeth, which I think is enough in the rearview mirror at this point, if he's atoned for whatever, if you want to blame him for that, which I think two adults had plenty of say in whatever they were doing. But you want to blame him? I think it's enough in the rearview mirror. I think he's atoned enough that this guy deserves his flowers. Because he was a prominent name in professional wrestling. So I don't want to go off his thing, but I think Luger deserves it. I think it's time.
He does. He's him, Demolition, Sid, Miss Elizabeth got to be the most deserving names not in right now. And I'll put... a sleeper pick, and Rick the Model Martel deserves to be in that fucking Hall of Fame too.
I agree with all of them. I agree with all of those names. Yeah. But I think before we sign off, I do want to say that I don't think wrestling will ever be the same. I think Sting was the last of a dying breed. I mentioned that earlier in text, and I think he's probably the last from that era, from my childhood at least. And it's sad sad that he's gone, but I love him. And yeah, I think that was really well done. They did a great job, and I'm certainly going to miss seeing the icon in any capacity on my television.
Yeah, man, he is the last of the last of that breed, that era. You know, the golden era, and then the Monday Night War era, man. And top 10 all time, in my opinion, and also top 10 favorite of mine. Thank you, Sting.
Thank you, Sting.
Yeah, I think he's a top 5 wrestler of all time, to be honest. But I think next Goldberg deserves his retirement match that he never got. Fuck Triple H.
That'll be it.
I'm sorry. Fuck Vince. It was Vince. Vince never gave him his retirement match.
Can't wait for that 5-minute banger.
It'll be a hell of a. There'll be a lot of spears going on.
There will. It'll be against Darby Allin and Orange Cassidy in AEW in a 3-way.
Tony Khan has him on speed dial.
Yeah, Tony Khan's smart. You think that wouldn't draw? Because it would.
Orange Cassidy's going over big. Beating Goldberg with his fucking hands in his pockets, dodging that spear.
I think this Goldberg could beat Orange Cassidy.
I think you probably could too.
Yes.
All right, gentlemen. Are we wrapping this up?
Yes, sir.
All right. The RVE, my man Goldberg, our special guest and always honorary Hillcast, the GOAT, Larkin. Thank you, Sting. We're out.